On Saturday, the Palestinian militant group Hamas launched a surprise attack on Israel. Sources say Hamas fired over 2,500 rockets, and Hamas militants entered Israel, attacking and killing civilians and taking others hostage. The attack has killed at least 1,200 people. Since the assault on Saturday, Israel has been targeting Gaza with retaliatory airstrikes, killing an estimated 1,000 Palestinians, displacing maybe 200,000 others, according to some estimates. In a press conference on Saturday, President Biden emphasized the United States' support of Israel.
Let me say this as clearly as I can. This is not a moment for any party hostile to Israel to exploit these attacks to seek advantage. The world is watching, and let there be no mistake. The United States stands with the state of Israel, just as we have from the moment the United States became the first nation to recognize Israel 11 minutes after its founding 75 years ago.
The news sent a major shockwave through the Middle East and beyond and has been dominating headlines here in the U.S. Our next guest studies politics in the Middle East and is here to provide some context for the latest news in the ongoing violence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? Were you personally connected with this weekend's attack? Are you hearing things from maybe a family members or friends in the region? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nadav Shelef is a professor of comparative politics and international relations at UW-Madison. Nadav, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Before we start digging into the history, details are still coming out about the enormity of this initial attack from Hamas, the atrocities committed. Can you talk a little bit about what we know and the effect it's had on Israeli civilians?
Well, as you know, it's something that's still ongoing, and we think continuously learn more. What we know right now is basically what you started off with on Saturday morning. Hamas basically invaded Israel and went through basically atrocities in Israeli villages along the border with the Strip.
I'm sorry, do we still have you, Nadav? Your line was coming.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, sorry. Then the current situation now, Israel preparing a ground invasion, it appears, in Gaza, airstrikes already going on. What do we know about the humanitarian situation facing Gaza civilians at this point?
So I think the Gaza Strip no longer has electric power. And so all things that go along with not having electricity are still going to happen. So water, electricity, they're all, I think, non-functional in the Gaza Strip now. I think the situation there is going to get worse before it gets better.
Now let's talk a little bit about what has led up to all this. First of all, can you talk about Hamas, who they are and who they do, and I guess importantly, who they don't represent?
So Hamas is a Palestinian nationalist organization. They emerged in the late 1980s to counteract what they saw as the secular Palestinian nationalists' willingness to reach an accommodation with Israel and to resist that accommodation. And so they're part of the Palestinian political spectrum. They would like to speak for all Palestinians. I'm not sure that they do, but they certainly contest for the leadership of the Palestinian national movement.
Can you talk about the status of Gaza and the West Bank? How did we end up in this situation of Israeli control at some points, now Palestinian Authority in control of one, Hamas in control of the other?
Sure. So Israel conquered the Gaza Strip and the West Bank in 1967. When these territories were held by Jordan and in Egypt, so that's how Israel came to occupy the territories in the sort of with the beginnings of the peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians, created a Palestinian Authority. Whose intent was to govern the West Bank and Gaza Strip and maybe develop into a state. down the road in 2006, in the last elections that they had, Hamas won those elections. Sort of in response, the Fatah-led Palestinian Authority in the West Bank basically refused to give them power, let them rule, and then Hamas took over the Gaza Strip, expelling the rest of the Palestinian movement. And so since then, the two parts of the area controlled or that the Palestinians would like to govern, one has been ruled by Fatah in the West Bank and the other by Hamas in the Gaza Strip.
Talking to Nadav Shalev from UW-Madison, professor of comparative politics and international relations, looking at the history behind the Hamas attack on Israel and now what looks like a looming war in Gaza. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Nadav, over this last year, headlines in the U.S., I think, have not been focused on what's been going on in the West Bank and Gaza. That doesn't mean things have been peaceful or quiet there. Can you talk about what's been happening in 2023 before this weekend's events?
I can, although I think this weekend's events are not necessarily, so they're not totally disconnected from what happened, has happened to date, but they're qualitatively different. And so I think, you know, there has been continuously violence in the West Bank, with many Palestinians killed, and confrontations between Israel and Palestinians in the West Bank. But what happened here is, I think, sort of in terms of its scale and in terms of the sort of apparently premeditated and horrific attacks on civilians, sort of takes it to a whole different league, which is why we see the kind of response that we've seen from Biden and from others around the world, and the kind of anger and fear by Israel, which I think accounts for its response.
We don't necessarily know all the motivations for Hamas, but what do we know about why they might have done something, as you say, on this exponentially higher scale, like this weekend's assault targeting so many civilians? Why now?
Well, I think why this is to shock and terrorize, right? I mean, I think that's their goal. As a whole, we don't, you know, this is still ongoing, and I think we don't really know what their motivations are. There are a number of things that could have played into this. One is the desire to gain hostages to use as bargaining chips for the release of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. Another is to try and torpedo the apparent rapprochement between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Yet another has to do with the infighting among Palestinians between the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, and as part of their struggle for supremacy within Palestine, to show who's in charge and who's the real movement standing up for Palestinians, and all of those things could have contributed to doing this. They may also not have anticipated so much success from their perspective, right? I think Israelis were certainly surprised at the complete collapse of the fencing and their early warning systems and the like that were around the Gaza Strip. And I don't know, but I suspect Hamas may have been not expecting to succeed quite at the rate that they did.
I'm going to dig further into a couple of things you just said. You mentioned negotiations, maybe bringing Israel and Saudi Arabia into, if not an alliance, into a state of cooperation and less conflict, motivated maybe in part by their fear of Iran. Is there a sense that the Muslim world, the Arab world in particular, is less and less interested in supporting the Palestinian cause, at most maybe paying lip service to it, and that might be part of what's driving Hamas here?
It could be. You know, I think so. I would make a distinction between the Palestinian states and their leaders for whom what you said is probably accurate, and for the Arab public at large, which from all the survey data that we see still cares deeply about Palestine and what happens to Palestinians. But I think the other part of it is, so since the Arab Spring in general, the Palestinian cause has been less at the forefront of the minds of in the Arab world. And I think that this may be an attempt to make it relevant again. So that's one way of potentially understanding this.
Talking to Nadav Shelef, professor in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. We're talking about some of the history and context of the Israel-Palestine conflict, which escalated a lot this weekend after the Palestinian militant group Hamas made an unprecedented attack targeting Israeli civilians. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your responses, what you'd like to see in the response from the American government. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison political science professor Nadav Shelef about the history behind the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and background behind the Hamas attack on Israel this weekend. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what's going on right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Tina is with us in Kenosha. Tina, hello.
Hi there. I have a couple of comments. Number one, the conflict has been going on in the Middle East forever. And I think one of the reasons that Hamas has, attacked now is because the Israeli government is going toward the authoritarian bent. We saw the Israelis taking to the street, protesting Netanyahu's policies of taking away power from the Supreme Court. So the Palestinians or Hamas are seeing this, saying if they take away the democratic rights of the Israelis, what are they going to do to the Palestinians, which they have already been eroding and taking away settlements illegally, and nobody's standing up for the Palestinians. So, and I am not anti-Semitic, and I don't think standing up for the Palestinians is anti-Semitic, because they also have a voice. These are people too.
Tina, thanks for the call. First of all, Nadav, Tina's read that Israeli domestic politics, and as she says, the disputes over plans to alter Supreme Court authority there and the protests that followed that, maybe Hamas, maybe Palestinians had their eye on that.
So it's possible. I think if that were the case, it would be sort of would reflect a deep misunderstanding of Israel on the part of Hamas. Just because Israelis were protesting, and Tina's completely right, there were sort of tremendous social upheaval and 40 some odd weeks of Israelis protesting in the streets against the government. All that went out the window as soon as Israel was attacked. And that was any sort of observer of Israel would, I think, that's not a surprise. And so there may have been an underestimation or a perception of Israeli weakness when there wasn't one.
Thanks for the call, Tina, at 800-642-1234. Nadav, part of that response, now we're seeing information about a unity government forming in Israel now, members of opposition parties joining the cabinet. Is that just symbolic, or is that a significant change?
So we don't know yet. It just happened. I suspect it's more than symbolic. From my understanding, is that the sort of real decision-making power is being shifted from the sort of security cabinet, which had it before, to a new group consisting of the opposition party that joined and the Likud, effectively Netanyahu and the defense minister. And thereby sidelining the sort of most radical right-wing components of the Israeli government. And so I think that that's the main function of the emergency government that's being formed.
Let's bring on another caller now. Matt is with us in Middleton. Matt, hi.
Hello. Uh, I I personally think that since Hamas was the elected government for the Palestinian area and they essentially declared war on Israel, I think that Israel is finally going to end this experiment with a Palestinian government, similar to the way Germany attacked their neighbors, and Germany essentially ceased to exist or existed only under an allied rule for more than 25 years. So outside of Israel essentially invading and replacing the government in that area, I don't see how it benefits Israel to do anything other than that. Otherwise, this is just going to keep happening over and over and over.
Matt, thanks for the call. And all reports, Nadav, suggest that Israel is planning some kind of a land ground invasion into Gaza. Matt, speculating at this point about what Israeli goals and outcomes might be. Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think Matt is at least right in the sense that it reflects what the Israeli government members are saying. So it's not, you know, they haven't formally articulated the goals of the military invasion that I expect is going to come. But some of them have said that they want to effectively eliminate Hamas from the Gaza Strip and sort of demilitarize Hamas, make sure there are no weapons there, things like that. That's impossible for Israel to do without reconquering the Gaza Strip. I think that the question that I haven't heard anybody in the Israeli government speak about is what happens after that. And so I think the Gaza Strip poses a very big problem to Israel of about a couple million people that they would then have to rule, who don't want to be ruled by Israel. And so I think that you know, Israel faces some difficult challenges if it reconquers the Gaza Strip about what to do next. And it's not clear to me that in and of itself, it might solve or might address the problem of Hamas as an organization, but it doesn't address the fundamental problem of having two nationalist movements, an Israeli movement and a Palestinian movement, that both want sovereignty in a particular location. And so they have to figure out how to deal with that. And that problem remains outstanding.
Matt, thanks for the call. Steve is with us now in Madison. Steve, hello.
Hello. I would just like to ask, wasn't the Hamas act really a reflection of an act of desperation against Israeli oppression and apartheid and, invasion of Israeli settlements into Palestinian territory? I would really like, and I think this is almost identical to what happened with what the United States did to the Native Americans in this country, where they would make treaties and then settlers would go settle in those areas. And when the Indians responded or attacked, they were called savages and they were crushed. And that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Steve, thanks for the call. Nadav, I think Steve, something on the position of supporters, stronger supporters of Palestinians here in the U.S., what do you think of his argument?
So let me say, I think two different things can be true at the same time. It is true that Israel continues to occupy land that the Palestinians, in which the Palestinians would like to have their independence. But I think that it can't or should not be used to justify the atrocities that Hamas perpetrated on Israeli civilians. I think my feeling is that Hamas probably set back the Palestinian cause by doing this.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Now, at the outset, we heard President Biden saying to regional neighbors, people who might perceive themselves as enemies of Israel, to not take advantage of this moment. What do you watch for in terms of, you know, possible escalation? Hezbollah out of Lebanon, believed to have done some attacks, and at least in solidarity with Hamas. Do you have concerns about a widening conflict, as bad as things are already going to be from last weekend and what's coming in Gaza?
It's always a worry that what starts locally can spread even more widely. Israel and Hezbollah have exchanged fire in northern Israel. So far limited, but the concern is there that it spills over, and then that it becomes a much wider regional confrontation. I think worryingly, it seems like Russia and the United States are aligning on opposite sides, and here too, not just, you know, maybe as a reflection of what's happening elsewhere in the world. And so there's a concern that this could be a match that lights a much bigger fire. And I think that's why one of the reasons you see the Biden administration moving so quickly and decisively, and with at least the threat of military force to try and keep things in check.
In just our last few moments, Nadav, I mean, one wants to hope that there could be, after all this, some sort of peaceful settlement that doesn't bring us back to steady low-level violence or extreme attacks like we saw this weekend. Do you see any road from here to there?
So if I put on an optimistic hat, I'd say you never know what can happen down the road, right? But it's hard to imagine at the moment sort of what happens, a way that enables Israelis and Palestinians to live peacefully together, at least in the medium term. So realistically, I wish it were otherwise, but I expect there to be conflict for a while to come.
Nadav, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
No, my pleasure.
That's Nadav Shelef, professor of comparative politics and international relations at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Been taking a wide look at the Israel-Palestine conflict and the recent escalation of strikes in Israel over the weekend and now Gaza that have killed thousands of civilians on both sides.